exciting. We don't know exactly who we'll play yet, but this time of year, you know, you may add a few things, but it's maybe tweaking some stuff and just trying to make sure you're as fresh as you possibly can be.
Like Jeff Capel's Pitt Panthers and Keith Dambrot's Duquesne Dukes, I'm hoping to do my best work in March as well. And so far, off to a good start. Tim Benz here. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast. Happy that you're with us. Download the app today for college basketball tournament season or go online to betrivers.com. I'm dipping my toe into the March Madness waters with some of the smaller conference tournaments. I do like betting on those games. I like taking the favorites teased down from big spreads or parlayed straight. Small conference regular season champions that dominate those conferences, they tend to do well in these tournaments more often than not and route to the NCAAs. Merrimack hit a home run for me over the weekend when I needed it. I got them down as part of a parlay today with UMass Lowell and with Charleston. Even though Charleston got dicey yesterday, Charleston has been the team everybody has assumed will get in from the CAA, but Wilmington is their biggest hurdle. I'll go chalk there with the Cougars at 30-3, even though that's a pretty good game and a pretty good matchup. Last night, Oral Roberts helped in the odds, tease them in my favor on a parlay with St. Mary's and Gonzaga. But St. Mary's and Gonzaga, boy, they did make me sweat for it. Both had big leads at various times in the game. Both saw those huge leads dissipate. St. Mary's more in the second half than the first. Gonzaga before halftime, but Gonzaga ended up winning by 11, and St. Mary's saw a 26-point lead against BYU dip to a 4-point game late in that contest. I was sweating, but the Gales pulled away. Imagine having the number on that one, though. It was 7 at Bet Rivers. Think about that. You get a 26-point lead, and you walk away with a push at 7. Wow. That one really hurts, especially since there were free throws that were missed all over the place at the end by St. Mary's. And there was almost a 3 that would have allowed BYU to cover. Think of it from that standpoint, too. BYU comes all the way back, and they're teeing it up at the end with a 3 that could have gotten you within 4, and then you could have somehow marched your way back to a cover there. I mean, my goodness. But, you know, that's when you feel like you got packed away if you got St. Mary's. And then you walk away thrilled that you got a push. That just has to sting. But let's get to Pitt and Duquesne. Despite strong turnaround seasons, Pitt and Duquesne given little chance to win their conference tournaments. Even though Pitt, who's at 21-10, 14-6 in ACC play, and Duquesne at 20-11, 10-8 in Atlantic 10 play. Even though they've had strong bounce-back campaigns, they're both relatively long shots to win their conference tournaments. Ken Pom, which is a widely used college basketball analytics website, Ken Pom has published its projections for the upcoming conference tournament week. As the number 5 seed, Pitt has been given just a 6.6% chance of winning the ACC tournament in Greensboro. For reference sake, Ken Pom's least likely winners last season were Akron out of the MAC at 6.7, Richmond in the A-10 at 7%, and Virginia Tech in the ACC at 8.1%. Pitt is 6-9 all-time in ACC tournament play. The Panthers' first game of the tournament will be Wednesday at 2:30. Jeff Capel's team will face the winner of Florida State and Georgia Tech. The Seminoles, 9-22 as the 12 seed. Georgia Tech, 14-7 overall as the 13 seed, both under 500 in conference play. Those teams battle it out in the tournament's first contest, which is Tuesday at 2. Regardless of who wins that game, the survivor will get Pitt for a third time this year. The Panthers beat the Yellow Jackets twice, 71-60 in Atlanta on January the 14th. They won the rematch at the Pete in February, 76-68. Meanwhile, the Seminoles won a game in Oakland, 71-64 in January. Pitt won the second game in Tallahassee, 83-75 in February. Now, in terms of their chances for the NCAA tournament, Pitt is a 9 seed in Jerry Palm's CBS Sports Bracketology, which published on Monday. But ESPN.com's Joe Lenardi has them as an 11th seed, barely avoiding one of the first 4 games in Dayton. So it would be best for the Panthers if they can win at least one game in Greensboro to solidify their spot in the field of 68 and not sustain another bad loss within conference to maybe Florida State again or to Georgia Tech. As for Duquesne, despite going from just 6 wins a year ago to 20 victories this season. The Dukes will have to win the Atlantic 10 tournament to advance to the NCAA bracket. Most projections have the A-10 getting just one team into the field this season, and that would be the automatic bid from the winner of the conference tournament this week in Brooklyn, and most people think that'll be Dayton or VCU. The Dukes march into New York City as the 6th seed. Their first game will be on Wednesday, 7:30 against LaSalle or Rhode Island. KenPom is giving the Dukes just a 7.2% chance of winning the whole tournament, a 16.5% chance of making the finals on Sunday afternoon. The Dukes won the inaugural A-10 tournament back in 1977 and haven't won it since. Given the roster turnover for the team this season, not a single Duke will take the court having played an A-10 tournament game within his Duking career. Now, Austin Rotroff has been with the program for 5 years, but between injuries and not playing in the COVID year, he's not been able to be on the court at the end of the season to participate in an A-10 postseason game. Duquesne beat Rhode Island at home 72-61 on January the 31st. They beat LaSalle on February the 22nd by a score of 91-74. Joe Reese led the team in scoring in both games, totaling 18 against the Rams at home and then 26 in Philly against the Explorers. If the Dukes win Wednesday, they get Fordham in the quarterfinals. The Rams beat Duquesne twice this year. Fordham finished 3rd in the conference with a 24-7 record, 12-6 in A-10 play. Personally, I like both teams to win at least one. I think they'll both win one game. Then I'd find it really hard to pick either team in the quarterfinal. Fordham has shown to be really a bad matchup for Duquesne, and Duke beat Pitt the first time. I think both teams will keep it close. I bet the lines are a little bit bloated in favor of the favorites in those games. That may be a fun parlay to play with the numbers in your favor. Maybe tease it up so you get wider spreads for both the Dukes and the Panthers, but bet them together. That could be a good time. But I would deem both teams winning their quarterfinal matchup a significant upset. Duquesne more so than Pitt, given that Pitt only lost by 5 at Cameron Indoor earlier this year, and Duke may be a little rusty for Game 1, perhaps. Duquesne is plus 800 to win the tournament at Bet Rivers. Plus 800, stunningly, that's more narrow odds than Fordham at plus 1400, who I think may be a sharp play in the long shot bet, actually. Pitt is at plus 1200 to win the ACC behind Duke, Miami, UVA, North Carolina, and Clemson. But let's talk to Jerry DePaula and see what he thinks from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Jerry covers both Pitt and Duquesne. We're also going to talk to him about some NFL draft stuff from Pitt. We'll talk about Kalijah Kancey, Jordan Addison, Izzy Abanikanda. Here's what Jerry had to say about all those topics in the Breakfast with Ben's podcast over at Trib Live. Jerry, great to catch up with you again. How you been?
My favorite time of year, Tim. Let's get the madness started.
I'm with you, and Pitt will be playing in Greensboro in the ACC tournament. Do they need to win one to get in for sure, Jerry? What do you think?
In my opinion, yes. If you go by Joe Inardi's bracketology, he has Pitt as the next to the last team with a bye, and Penn State actually is the last team with the bye.
Yeah, how about that?
So that means that if they lose this game to Georgia Tech or Florida State, two teams, they're in the lower end of the ACC. Pitt could actually get knocked off the bubble and right into the NIT. Wouldn't that be a come down? I think they need to win. I mean, they will win this game. I have a feeling they're going to win this game by a double digit margin. It may be close for a while, but I think they'll come back and whoever they play, they're going to beat them. And it has to be Georgia Tech 3 times. It's very difficult to beat a team 3 times in one season. But Georgia Tech, I think, is going to beat Florida State. Florida State, has lost by a lot of big margins this year, too, even though they beat Miami in Miami last week. That's something to think about, too.
Well, but, even though Florida State beat Pitt, right?
Florida State beat Pitt in January, at the Pete. And that's the reason that Pitt is on the bubble right now, because they lost to Florida State at home. They lost to Virginia Tech, another, bad team in the ACC or a team close to the bottom of the standings. They lost to Michigan. They lost to West Virginia by 25, 30-point margins. And those teams are barely 500 teams. West Virginia's probably going to get in because everybody loves the Big 12. But I think that some of these losses that Pitt has are going to hurt them in the end.
There seems to be some split opinion on Pitt. Like, for instance, Jerry Palm in the CBS bracketology has them more snug into the tournament. He's got them as a 9 seed.
You know, I think it's best if Pitt ends up as a 10 or 11 seed because if you're an eight or nine and you win, you got to play the number one seed in your region. But if you're an 11 or a 10, you don't have to do that. Although Lenardi's bracketology has Pitt playing Kentucky in the first game,
yeah, 6-11
game, 6-11 game, and then they would have to play Gonzaga after that, and the Gonzaga has been a team just out, like a number two seed, just out of the top five all season. But I think they're very good, and they're probably going to be an Elite Eight team in the end. But you know, Pitt is one of those teams that they've had a nice season. They played really hard, and they played, you know, with a lot of confidence and a lot of togetherness. You know, which is a switch from previous Jeff Capel teams, and he's mentioned that a couple times. He even talked yesterday about three ways he described his team. His 5 years at Pitt would be hard, dysfunction, and incredibly rewarding. But dysfunction is part of it. Until this year, when he brought all these guys in from all these different colleges, all these transfer guys, and they all meshed together like they have known each other all their lives. So I give Capel a lot of credit for that. But losing to Notre Dame, my goodness. I mean, I understand there was so much emotion with Mike Bray, everything, his last home game. But then they went to Clemson and lost by 26 or something like that a couple of days later. So, you know, if Pitt has those bad losses, and they have some good wins, obviously, Miami and Virginia, good wins. But when you lose to Notre Dame and Virginia Tech and Florida State, that's not good. And if you can't win on Wednesday, I don't think they're going to the tournament.
I'm with you, Jerry. What you said earlier about at least the first round game, if they do manage to get in, maybe it is better off if they're in 11 or a 10, so long as they don't have to play in Dayton first. You know, you have just as good of a shot, I think, of winning your first round game if you're an 11 or 10 based on the parity in college basketball, and then maybe a better shot of winning the second round game as opposed to perhaps eking one out in an 8-9 game and then getting a number one, because I do think it gets a little thicker in the top four or five. After that, it feels like a pretty significant drop off to me between those top, you know, four or five teams in basketball and then a big thick middle, if you know what I mean. Like, I'll give you the Palm one, for example. Again, if they're a 9-8, they get Providence in the first round in Columbus. I mean, that would almost be a home game for Pitt, I would think. And then Purdue, right, in the second round is probably going to be a home game for Purdue.
Well, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between playing Purdue and Gonzaga in the second round. I think Gonzaga is a 1-8 seed. Actually, they'll probably be a 2, but they're just as good as some of
those. Palm has them as a 3. I actually think they might fall off the 2 line, Jerry, even if they beat St. Mary's in the championship.
If they beat St. Mary's for a second time this season, I think they'll be a 2 for sure.
Okay, all right.
But, you know, what I'm rooting for, Tim, and maybe – I like to root for the story. How about Pitt versus Penn State and Dayton?
Oh, I'd love that. Well, for a while, it was looking like you might see Pitt, Penn State, and West Virginia all in Dayton.
I guess, probably not all three of them will go to Dayton, but I think it would be very interesting in almost karma if Pitt has to play, if Penn State has to play Pitt. Now, I don't think there's a real problem with Penn State not wanting to play Pitt in basketball. I think it's mostly in football, but still, it would be a great game. It really would. We could all drive there. A lot of fans would be coming from both places. Would be, and that's a great place to play basketball too. It's a great venue. So that's if Pitt actually has to do that, I don't think it's going to be that bad of a thing for them. Quick get in is good.
Quick aside here, Jerry. I don't know how you feel about this. I've always been of the opinion that since they expanded the Dayton games and made them, you know, the first four,
right,
I've always wanted those to be like the bloated extra teams, the big conference teams from the Power Fives that are trying to get in on the 11 line. I don't like the Cinderella small conference teams having to play each other in those games. I'd rather just see those teams get into the field of 64, get what they deserve for winning their conference tournament. And if you're barely playing to get in, if you're one of the last four at-large teams in, those spots should all be for those kind of teams, like the 11 seeds. Everybody should just play to get onto an 11 line. That's what I think. What do you think?
Well, I think that they match up two 16s, at least two 16s in two of those four games, just because they already don't deserve to be in the field of 64.
I don't know about that. I think if you're allowing teams to get in for winning your conference, if you're recognized as a D1 conference, then you deserve it. You deserve the chance to lose by 35 to Gonzaga. That's what I think.
Well, maybe that's what they're trying to avoid. They're trying to avoid that. You know, some of these teams are going to lose by 50. You know, I think there's been some of those games. Of course, Virginia was the number one seed, lost five years ago in 2018. I remember covering the Pirates in Bradenton and watching that game.
But Jerry, you know what though? It doesn't having bigger schools draw more eyeballs to the sets and bring more people to Dayton?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely already have Mississippi State as one of the first four.
Let me look here. Let me see if I can bring this up. Well, I can tell you what Palm has that's still up in front of me here. It's Michigan, Penn State, Mississippi State, and Utah State.
Well, there's a couple Power Six teams right there.
Three of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I really think that you're right. I think that would be draw eyeballs. It would be more interesting than Southeast Missouri State against Drake, which might be one of the ones we see. Who wants to see that, right? But I just think that it would be interesting if Pitt could play Penn State in the first four. They have a chance to win, obviously, a better chance to win than if they open up against Kentucky, I think. I think Kentucky's a better team than Penn State. That's another thing. I think it's good. Some of these teams that have been struggling during the season are going to make some noise in their conference tournaments and in the NCAA tournament. I think North Carolina, if you want to talk about that right now, Tim, that's my pick to go all the way to the ACC tournament championship game. I think North Carolina, even though they lost to Duke the other night in a close game, they've been playing better lately. They have a lot of talent on that team. And I think they can beat Virginia in their second game.
Where'd you see Drake as a 16 line? I've seen him as high as a 12.
No, I was pulling. Southeast Missouri State and UNC Asheville. There's two 16s, right? And then Farley Dickinson, you know, is a team that lost to Pitt this year by a bunch of points. And they used to be they're in the Northeast Conference. They used to, you know, beat Robert Morris every year. Sorry, not every year, but they played Robert Morris a lot. So that's the kind of teams you're going to see. You know, in that first four, but I think you're right. Pitt, Penn State, or Mississippi State, Kentucky, or whatever would be games that would be way more interesting.
Jerry DiPaolo with us. You mentioned how far you think North Carolina's going to go. How far you got Pitt going?
I think they'll win Wednesday against. I think it's going to be Georgia Tech against Pitt, and Pitt's going to win Wednesday. And I can see them beating Duke in the next game. But if I had to make a prediction, if you really wanted me to make a prediction, I'd have to pick Duke. You know, Duke has too much talent, too much one and done, too many NBA guys who've been freshmen all year and now are really playing better because they have a lot of experience. They've won six in a row. Only two teams in the ACC are going into the tournament with winning streaks. Georgia Tech has won three in a row, and Duke has six in a row. So I think Pitt will give Duke a very good game. It'll be a close game, probably like the Miami game Saturday night. But I see Pitt getting knocked out by Duke in their second ACC game.
I was looking at some of the odds, Jerry, and I wrote about this in the Trib today. Both Duquesne and Pitt, even though they've had really strong turnaround seasons, they're not getting a lot of love from the Ken Pom chances. You know, the Ken Pom website did predictive theories and threw out the, not odds, but percent chance of both those teams winning. They did it for every conference, actually.
Right.
And they've got Pitt as a 6.6% chance of winning the ACC. And for the A-10, Duquesne is at 7.2%. I actually saw on Bet Rivers that the odds for Duquesne, plus 800, that's better than Fordham, who's at plus 1,400. That's surprising to me, given that Fordham has beaten Duquesne twice and given that Duquesne would have to go through Fordham to get to the semifinals.
And Duquesne didn't even show up for that Fordham game on Saturday. That has to be a big disappointment. They had a chance to earn a double bye in the Atlantic 10 tournament, and they just got blown out in the second half by Fordham. Well, how about this, Tim? You know, this is kind of a radical thought that I've been thinking about lately. What if Pitt loses on Wednesday, and they don't get the NCAA tournament, and they go to the NIT, okay, which is a huge come down for what they have been expecting all year. And who might they play in the NIT? How about Duquesne?
That would be great. Force the city game on them.
Well, the NIT, I guess the teams, each school might have something to say about who their opponents are, right? Is there more of that going on in the NIT than the NCAA? You can actually, NCAA, you can't ask to play anybody. But maybe the NIT, if they come to Pitt and say, hey, how about you pop playing Duquesne in the NIT? I think Jeff Capel would give him a rousing no.
I would agree with that, and I think it's funny because Pitt fans keep wanting that to happen in a bowl game so they can get Penn State. It's ironic that that would be the case. But, you know, from what I've heard from Keith Dambrot, he's still a bit dubious of their chances of getting into the NIT because the A-10's likely only going to get one team in. Let's say it's VCU or Dayton. Then it's going to be the other one of them, St. Louis, Fordham. I bet those three teams are in before Duquesne, and depending on what George Mason does, maybe even George Mason or Davidson too, depending on what they do in the tournament.
Well, Duquesne would have to make a run, maybe to the semifinals. They'll get into the NIT, I think. I think that's possible. You know, the times I've watched Duquesne play this year, they have a lot of talent on that team, and Keith Dambrot has done a tremendous job. Putting that team together, pretty much, you know, what Jeff Capel has done, you know, bringing in these transfers and just, you know, redoing the whole face of the team in one off season. You know, they won six games last year. Boy, that's tough. You win six games in one entire season out of 31 games. That's hard to do. And here they are sitting with 20 right now. And I think it's the first time in maybe two or three decades that Pitt and Duquesne have both won 20 games in the same season. So it would be interesting if they played, but it would be more interesting if they played, in a regular game every year. But for some reason, they don't want to do it. Pitt doesn't want to do it for the same reason that Penn State doesn't want to play Pitt in football.
Well, you know what, Jerry? I think with the way things have gone this year for Pitt, it's underscored why they would never do the city game again. Because
they could lose.
That VCU game is hanging over their head like crazy. The one bad loss, perceived bad loss to Florida State's hanging over their head. You know, bad losses count more than anything else these days, and I think that's why Pitt is so reticent to do the city game, whereas beating Duquesne wouldn't mean much for him.
Yeah, but Michigan and West Virginia are bad losses too, aren't they? You know, they probably expected Michigan and West Virginia to be better teams than what they are right now. I think it's probably why, you know, Jeff Capel scheduled them. But if they had lost to Duquesne instead of West Virginia, that would probably be considered a worse loss, I guess, but they're both kind of mediocre teams anyway.
Jerry, before we go, thoughts on some of the pick guys and how they showed out at the combine, particularly Kalijah Kancey.
He ran a faster 40 time than Aaron Donald did, right? By one hundredth of a second.
Yeah, when they retimed his second go round, it ended up being a tenth of a second faster. Yeah.
So it's 4.66, I think.
6.7,
and Donald was 4.68. People comparing him to Aaron Donald, which is really unfair to the poor guy. I mean, he's a nice player, very good player, an impactful player, you know, not only, you know, on your roster and your starting lineup, but impact the way he knocks people down. I remember Charlie Partridge talking to me in the office last season. He said he was great in the video on the way back from Virginia Tech. I think it was last year, actually. And all of a sudden he's watching, you know, a play with Kalijah Kancey just ran right into a guy and knocked him over, you know, like a cement truck. And he went, whoo, like, wow, that's something else. And all the guys sitting around and started laughing because they knew exactly what he was looking at. Kancey can really make an impact when he hits somebody and has a really good chance he's going to be a first round pick. And of course, I think there's going to be a really good chance he'll be there when the Steelers pick. I don't know what the Steelers think about him. They do need some help on the defensive line, obviously, and he could probably help them. They need help everywhere, actually, in both lines, and probably a wide receiver too. But Kancey might be there when Pitt picks.
I saw, even though he didn't
or
run,
Steelers pick. I'm sorry.
I saw, even though he didn't run due to a hamstring injury, that Abanikanda was talking to Dallas, the Ravens, Broncos, Saints, and Miami. Boy, I think the Ravens and Miami would be great fits for him.
Yeah, Izzy is the kind of running back, has some size to him, some big broad shoulders and big thighs, but he also has breakaway speed. We saw that in the Tennessee game last season where he just bursts in, he had one crack through the defensive line, gets into that secondary, and he's outruns guys. And he's outrunning cornerbacks, SEC cornerbacks. And you don't see that often. I think the guy has a chance to be a pretty good running back in the NFL, no matter where he goes. And I think if he goes to, you know, Dallas would be a good place for him. You know, he can learn, you know, behind their veteran running backs, and maybe even play a little bit his first year. So yeah, I think Izzy's going to be a good pro running back.
What about the way Addison performed? He pulled out after tweaking his back. He didn't run a great 40 time, measured a little smaller than anticipated. Is his stock dropping a little bit after what I felt was an ascent going into some of the pre-draft workouts?
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I think Jordan Addison is a great player, and Pitt would not have won the ACC championship without him. And I'm sure Kenny Pickett would love to be reunited with him, you know, on the Steelers. And Addison probably would like to come back, and Pitt fans would probably, you know, welcome him back if he came and played for the Steelers. They were upset with him, you know, after he transferred to USC. But all can be forgiven if he plays for the great Steeler team. But I'm not sure that he's a first – half of the first round pick. I think he's a second half of the first round guy. You know, wide receivers today, some of the better ones I think in the NFL are bigger guys. You know, guys with some thickness to them who can also run. And Addison can do all that. And he made that great catch against Virginia. We wrestled the ball away from a Virginia cornerback and went for a touchdown that clinched the ACC championship in 2021. And he's a physical guy. But he doesn't have the great size that you know, I think a lot of these NFL teams are looking for. So I would think that Addison would be a second half of the first round guy.
Yeah, I mean, is he all that different from Zay Flowers, really, from Boston College?
No, not really. You know, but I don't know. The wide receivers, it seems to be in the NFL. I heard it's a bad year for wide receivers in the NFL this year. But you can get good ones later on, too. I mean, if the Steelers are looking for another wide receiver in the draft, I don't think they should take one in the first round, you know, even if Addison is there. And you know, I don't know what they think of him. I'm sure Mike Tomlin, you know, loves him because he loves all those Pitt guys. But I just think that it's time, you know, for the Steelers to address either cornerback or maybe linebacker or one of the trench positions, offensive or defensive line, and pick up a wide receiver later. You got two picks in the second round, right? So you can get one maybe there.
All right, my thanks to Jerry DePaula. Read him this week in the Trib throughout the course of conference tournament action and throughout Selection Sunday going into the NCAA tournament next weekend, and keep tracking him for draft coverage as well. Let's get some hockey right now with the Pens back at home at PPG Paints Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. I may go puck line on this one at -1.5 in favor of the Pens. The straight-up odds are at -315. I don't really like that, so I may go puck line at -122 at a goal and a half. I really like the Pens this evening. Columbus has lost 3 of 4 and is in last place in the East with only 46 points. The Pens have won 4 of 5 and have finally had some practice day with their new guys from the trades. Just 20 games left, and if the Pens are going to smell the finish line at all, it's time to open up the throttle. Ron Hextall insisting that he helped get the Penguins better with the trades executed before the deadline. With the club clinging to the second wild card in the Eastern Conference, such evidence needs to be seen starting immediately, as in tonight against Columbus. Michael Granlund, the newly acquired forward, was part of the Pens' win in Tampa during his first game in black and gold on Thursday. However, newly acquired Nick Bonino, he was part of a loss in Florida on Saturday along with Granlund. Now Dmitry Kulikov has arrived from the Anaheim Ducks, and the improvement parts that Hextall has acquired will all be on hand tonight and just in time. There have been two things that Penguins fans have been banking on to see some cushion for their team in the race for the Eastern Conference's final two playoff slots, one of the two wild card spots. The first thing is games in hand. The Penguins have played only 62 games. The Carolina Hurricanes, who lead the Metro, are the only team in the East to have played fewer thus far. In fact, the Islanders, 72 points, the Pens, 71 points in 7th and 8th, respectively, the two wildcard spots. The Islanders have played 65 games, and those two teams play each other Thursday night at PPG Paints Arena. It'll be the second of 4 straight games against divisional foes and the second of 5 straight games at home. That's the other thing Penguins fans have been leaning on for hope, not just games in hand, but the schedule. with that much home ice in the near future and that many divisional games, the Penguins have an opportunity to soak up a lot of points and damage the causes of some divisional rivals in the process. Furthermore, 11 of the remaining 20 games are against teams currently out of a playoff spot. Those are theoretically 22 very attainable points hanging out there to be claimed. The Pens can get 18 to 20 of them, and 8 or 9 of the remaining 18 points for the other 9 games, that gets them into the 97 to 99 point range. And it took Washington 100 to qualify at the last wild card spot in the East a year ago. Nashville got in at 97 as the last team in the West, so that might be enough. But don't flirt with it. Do better than that. If this team was truly worth helping, as much as it could be helped at the deadline, given the cap situation that Hextall created in the first place, then the Pens need to turn it on in March and April. No more four-game win streaks merely to correct four-game losing streaks. No more dog efforts like their 6-0 and 7-2 losses to Los Angeles and Edmonton last month. Beat the Islanders Thursday, since they beat you 3 times already. Enough with the excuses and pity parties over injuries and who isn't available from what was a bad bottom six anyway. Provided Jake Guentzel and Tristan Jarry are able to play tonight, the lineup is as close to intact as it has been at any point this season. So win, often. Because all I kept hearing during the run up to the trade deadline was that Hextall owed it to this locker room to improve the depth chart at the deadline. He did, minimally anyway. If the players disagree with that assessment, then they should score a bunch, keep the puck out of their own net, and prove that more should have been done because they were worth it. If that doesn't happen, don't expect me to put blame for the last 20 games on Hextall. That's going to be on Sullivan and the players themselves. All right, that'll do it for today. That'll do it for this week. I'll be back with Mark Madden on Thursday during his podcast here at the Bet Rivers Network. And you can hear me next Tuesday as we get ready for the first 4 games in Dayton and look at the brackets as well. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast. It's brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.